Hello and super duper welcome back to another episode of FinTechPodden. And today you have me, Gustav, here and...
Johan, as always.
Yes, and we have an invincible guest today. Right, Johan?
Yes, the very famous ChatGPT has joined us for a special trend-setting episode, right?
So we, neither me or Johan had the time to walk over all the heavy work you need to do to get out a good episode. So we actually took help from ChatGPT, and it was surprisingly good to summarize some of the biggest news, takes, and happenings in the fintech over the last few month or quarter or something like that. So we will basically go through that with you, the audience. Should we say anything else before we kick off, Johan?
No, let's kick off with the first topic. Do you want to go ahead, Gustav?
Yes, and this topic is the headline, overall funding decline within the fintech industry. And the fintech funding in the first three quarters of 2023 dropped to a $29 billion, which is significantly lower than $54 billion during the same period in 2022. And I guess this is not a surprise for anyone. It's been something that people have talked about will come and happen, especially when all this started with the higher interest rates and all of that. It was pretty much every VC said that it tough times coming, and now we are here in the middle of the tough times.
And the question is, like, looking ahead, it will be super interesting to see if we will ever get back to the same levels that we once were for like 1 or 2 years ago, or if fintechs in the future, maybe they don't need that, say, the same amount of money that they needed before. Like, maybe you just need half of the team, and maybe you just need half of the cash then. So maybe the record from 2021 and 2022, who knows? Like, maybe we will never get back to those volumes again.
Maybe the new reality. But do you want to take on the second topic that we found?
Yeah, on the happy note, late stage investment is actually seeing some sort of recovery. So there has been a notable increase in funding values and deal count for mature startups, marking a slight recovery in the late stage investments. So even if the total amount of invested money into fintech is decreasing quite a lot, there's some activity in the space, and I think that's connected to some of the other news in this today's episode as well. So one idea could be that companies with a lot of traction, with customers, with good income and so on, good numbers, they can raise more money because they are showing great numbers now when they have maybe downsized their employees a little bit, have focused on the core business. Do you think there's any other reasons, Gustav?
The VCs still have a lot of money and still needs to invest. And I guess that investing in like those more growth cases where you basically have an idea and put a huge potential, get less money. And the few selected ones in later stage that actually can prove, as you were into, good numbers and so on, is what they focus on then. And focusing on investing in strongest balance sheets of all fintech companies that have really, trimmed their business and become stronger, basically. And to bridge over to the third topic here, which is there's a shift in investment stages. Seed stage investments fell dramatically, as we just were into, while late stage investments showed growth. For instance, seed stage investments totaled $539 million, which is a 56% decrease from the first half of 2022. And I just think that is simply what's happening here, that in the new environment with the higher interest rates and all of that, investors are more, in Swedish we say kräsna,
picky
with what they're choosing, and they can't really spend as much money on potential unicorns, which are just an idea, as they did just 2-3 years ago. It was crazy back then, so it's it's not weird or that it's not as big numbers today, I think. But do you have any other like more in-depth take on that, or is it just...
I actually read a take on Twitter another day that said, based on the previous hype in 2021, like late stage funds actually moved down into pre-seed and seed stages that they haven't been doing too much of before, actually inflating the investment rounds in the early stages. But that have now changed as well, because many of those funds didn't see any good returns. They couldn't find an investor, just throw in a lot of money. So now, yeah, based on that Twitter thread, they said like that the later stage funds are actually going later again. And maybe that recaps back to the last news as well, that we see a trend like the late stage companies are now getting easier to raise money. Could be because the funds are focusing more on those, maybe, yeah, more on their core business than just spread out over all different stages.
I think that's a good point. What else do we have?
Yeah, so there's quite a new regulation in EU that has regulated the business of crowdfunding platforms. So now if you are a crowdfunding platform in the EU, you must have a license. So that is now in place. And hopefully this will lead to a bit more serious actors maybe in the crowdfunding space, because there has been quite many different actors, but with very different quality in my opinion, at least. So hopefully this could be a regulation that are actually taking out the bad actors, and maybe the crowdfunding can get a better reputation than it had before. What do you think, Gustav?
Yeah, maybe. But maybe to clarify also, like crowdfunding platforms here, is it that like Kickstarter and such? Or is it even including like peer-to-peer loans? Or what do you...
I think it mostly the Kickstarter, but also when you invest in like properties, or like when startups are fundraising equity through crowdfunding platforms. So mostly that type. So instead of companies going to real investors or go to the proper equity market, raising capital through IPOs and so on, before a lot of maybe not too good companies use the crowdfunding market to go directly to consumers, and it was not too regulated. So it was very much a big difference in the quality of companies that went this route. So hopefully this new regulation will even out and may raise the quality of the companies that are doing this. So in the end, it's good for the end consumer that the private persons out there do not get tricked by good marketing and so on.
Yeah, and I guess like I don't remember the name of it, but it's some company here in Sweden which raises funds for real estate industry or like construction industry. And given the latest, the hit that industry have taken in the market, like with so many layoffs and low new projects and all of that, it must be a lot of investors that are underwater, what you can call it, with this kind of. But I haven't think too much into this new regulation actually, but I think it's really good to have a more same playing ground in several EU countries. Must be good. Anyway, let's move on to IPO preparations, which is the next hot topic that we have. And that is about fintech companies like Klarna and Circle, who rumors say, and much looking like it, that they are moving towards their IPOs, indicating their growth and maturity in the market. And then a question, will Stripe do an IPO as well? But we have heard rumors about Klarna IPO for many years. But what is it that is maybe indicating that it's actually coming to a time for an IPO during next year?
I think two things that are maybe a bit more hard evidence. I think like the last quarter, Klarna reported a profit. It was quite a lot. Many quarters ago, they did a profit. They have been working with losses. They have been doing losses for quite a while. So that's one point. And then the other point is, I think they have set up a specific UK-based company that companies are only doing that if they are planning to IPO. Something like they can search for equity in different markets through that company and so on. So that is like a very hard proof that they are doing this in for real this time. But then the timeline, of course, are not decided. So it could be next year, but it could also be the year after.
Yeah, and I think something that I would think maybe talks for that it's coming at a later stage rather than 2024 is that we're still not really in a good market, right? Not at least for these kind of companies. But even though there's been a good year for Amazon, Facebook, and Google, and the FAANG companies and so on, still not a good environment, I think, for IPOs in general. But maybe that changes. We'll see. But yeah, it's it's really interesting anyway, regardless if it's coming next year. I think it will be coming within the few coming years, at least. And the next topic, we have a fun topic.
Yeah. Actually, so there's a new fintech out there, or quite new, called Charlie, that is a senior-focused banking platform. So they just did some new funds in October. So it's 16 million Series A USDs. And what I think is cool with this is that we actually right now seeing the trend where the traditional banking services are gonna broken down into more age gaps for brackets. So we have seen a lot of Gen Z banking services the last years, and that is to cover the maybe the younger part of the population. But I think we'll see a lot more services such as this Charlie that is aiming for the maybe a bit older population. And I think this will be a huge problem going forward in many markets, especially in Sweden, when we are now closing down bank offices and there's still quite a lot part of the populations that are maybe not too used to do everything digitally, even if you and me, Gustav, are doing everything and more on our phones nowadays. There's quite a lot of people that are not too comfortable doing everything online. And that will be a shift, I think, in the years to come. Like maybe we do need to have specific services for that type of population, but also better services for maybe younger parts of the population as well.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and as they mentioned also in this topic, that it's efforts in fraud prevention, which I think is like maybe the most important thing to focus on for specifically this target group, the seniors. As here in the Nordics, I know that there is issues with that, with the social engineering and people basically fooling older people and getting their hands on their money. But if we can, through technology, engineer away that possibility in some way, I think that is something that would be very important, and maybe even can get help from the governments and so on, because it's a huge amount of money that's being stolen from old people. So that's a good effort. That's why I liked it. Moving on to next topic, which is about Revolut. And when I read this first, I was like, what will the Stronsky or something like that. Will he quit Revolut? But no, it's just a new CEO for their UK division, where they have been struggling for a long time now, it feels, to get this banking license. So I guess it's another attempt to do something to get that forward. So,
but by the way, Gustav, have you seen the new redesign of Revolut? Are you still using it?
But it was a few weeks ago, so no.
Yeah, I think I got the new design maybe 2 weeks ago or something. I think they call it Revolut 10. It's some sort of facelift of the UI. And I haven't decided yet if I like it or not, but it's new at least.
What was it called? Revolut 10?
Yeah, I think they call it Revolut 10. I don't know if it's because they are 10 years or...
Yeah, but interesting to follow, see if the new CEO can do new stuff there. What's next?
Yeah, so we have buy now, pay later company. We talked about Klarna before, but this is actually a bit younger one called Tabby. It's a buy now, pay later platform focusing on the Middle East. They just raised $200 million in a Serie D funding. So what I think this showcases is that there's quite a lot of interest still in the buy now, pay later space. So yeah, so I think that's super interesting to see. And I can really understand it because after trying out the services a bit more recently, I was really impressed of how smooth like Klarna really is to use. Even if you use it for direct payments or payment for Swish and so on, like just to have those multiple options in one single place for one single company, it must be so much easier for the e-commerce platforms and as well me as a consumer to just use Klarna because they have all my details. I just need to input my email and they have all my payment information, my addresses. I don't need to fill out any other stuff. So I definitely see the value of this.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting because I had not heard about this Tabby before, but obviously then in the Middle East, so it wasn't, that was the reason, but oh, I hadn't heard about them. But isn't it, it's not really allowed to do lending in that way in many of those countries with the Islam and all of that, but I know too little, but it's interesting still that it's such a, maybe they have some kind of healthy way to pay back the loan or something. Can dig into that and see. I expect that since it's in this area of the world.
Mm. And so just some numbers that they are having 10 million active users and are working with more than 30,000 brands. And this is just like a fintech company that we here in Sweden haven't heard too much of before. So it just showcases how huge this market can be and how many different markets around the world there probably will be.
Surprising. In those countries as well. I thought they were so rich that they didn't need this kind of services. Enough about that. Let's move on to the next topic. It's about Ethereum and Bitcoin, and specifically the surge that we have experienced and seen over the last months. Both Ethereum and Bitcoin have reached new yearly highs. And it's driven by positive developments in BTC, short for Bitcoin, spot exchange-traded funds and ETFs, and news about BlackRock's plan to create a spot ETH ETF. And this is basically creating contracts that people can buy and sell. Pretty much like you don't buy and sell oil barrels today, but you basically, in order to invest in oil, you buy a contract, and that is an ETF. And this is the same thing for crypto. And it is something that is required if larger institutions would even touch this kind of assets. And because if you're talking about pension funds and those kind of larger institutions with huge amount of monies, if they invest in crypto and Ethereum, they would never go and take their own wallet and have a private key and so on. They would buy and invest in an ETF. And it's, I think it's 10 or 12 years since the first application to create a Bitcoin ETF was filed into the SEC. And now it's every day there is news about this, and then people are really, it really feels like it's just a few weeks or months away to get the spot ETF. So it's exciting to see what happens there. It might be that it's, as usual in investing, buy the rumors, sell the news. Just because it's creating an ETF, I don't assume that every pension fund in the world will throw money in there. But maybe I'm wrong, but when there is just rumors, everyone can just speculate. And I think that is a huge driver in the increase in price. But important to know is that Bitcoin has gone up now to, I think, $37,000 or $38,000 from its lows. And it's like halfway to the previous peak. So we'll see if it reaches the all-time high this or next year or collapse again. What's your take?
Yeah, I haven't been following the crypto space too much lately, but I definitely still think it's interesting. So I think you are following it much more closely than me. So what do you think, Gustav, traction-wise and so on, will we, like, how soon do you think we'll, or will we get back to the previous peak of interest of the, yeah, like, general population, or will it be a bit more niched in the future? Or, like, how do you see the trend going with the adoption?
I think it's far from the peak in terms of adoption, but I also think that it will come back again because it has done that so many times before. Maybe not with the same, you say, keywords, buzzwords, NFTs, and this and that. Maybe there's something else. And there is a lot of things going on in the crypto industry where people are building more easy-to-use applications and so on that are still non-custodial, basically not the centralized app, but more decentralized fashion and so on. So, but if I were to guess, I would guess it's year to years away still.
Mm.
But I'm quite certain that it will come back and be even stronger than the last time eventually. But we'll see. It will be interesting to see what happens with these ETFs, if that really, it unlocks the door for many financial institutions to put some of their money into crypto. But it's still unclear if they will do so. But we'll see how it goes. It's far away from, at least in adoption numbers. I heard I think we mentioned it before, but that one of the larger platforms for NFTs, OpenSea, their volume at the peak, or their commission at the peak, was higher than the low than the volume is today.
Mm.
That's insane. It's 8% down or something, if they had a 2% commission or something like that. Yeah, yeah. But another topic, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I think this is more in your space, actually. But if you remember a person called Michael Saylor, it is actually now up over $1 billion in unrealized profits on their Bitcoin holdings through the company called MicroStrategy, right, Gustav?
Yeah, so not he personally, but his company have gone completely all in to crypto, or not crypto, into Bitcoin only. And he has kept investing every single dollar that the company have free to invest. And yeah, now when Bitcoin has gone up a little bit, it's up over $1 billion. And I just think if crypto were to go up and beyond the previous all-time highs, then this company will be, MicroStrategy would be insanely rich. Because they are so heavily invested in Bitcoin. So that's really interesting to see. Many say that many more companies will follow them if that happens. They will say, okay, what the hell did they do that we didn't do? Interesting to follow and see.
Yeah. So let's round off and let's just say that there's happening quite a lot of things in the fintech space. So it really feels like it starts buzzing again after a while where it has been quite calm. So it will be super exciting to see now how this space evolves, and especially maybe looking into like how many people or employees that the large fintech companies such as Klarna and others, like how many they fired. And so that will be super exciting to see if they are doing their own fintech. So in a couple of years, do we going to see a lot of like alumnus from the larger? So yeah, that would be super exciting to see, I think.
I couldn't agree more. But today's episode is coming to an end. And we thank you for listening and see you in the next episode.
Yes. Bye-bye.